From NPR News, this is special coverage of the debate on Iraq. I'm Melinda Penkava in Washington. At the UN Security Council a few hours ago, Chief UN Weapons Inspectors Hans Blix and Mohammed El-Baradei presented their report on the past 3 months of inspections in Iraq. They said they had not found weapons of mass destruction and had been able to interview a few Iraqi scientists. But they also said that Saddam Hussein had not accounted for any banned weapons. As Blix put it, although no one should jump to the conclusion that those weapons exist, they also should not conclude that the weapons do not exist. With many eyes and ears turned their way, Blix and El-Baradei were circumspect. They revealed little emotion. It was the interpretation of their reports that brought the drama, as members of the Security Council took their turns to comment. If the Security Council meeting 3 weeks ago seemed to be just a recitation of prepared speeches, today's was closer to a real debate. There are, of course, two camps. France's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dominique de Villepin, wanted the inspections to continue.
So what have we just learned from the reports by Mr. Blix and Mr. El-Baradei? We have just learned that the inspections are producing results. Of course, each of us wants more. And we will continue together to put pressure on Baghdad to obtain more. But the inspections are producing results.
France's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Dominique de Villepin, speaking through an interpreter there. The results that Villepin spoke of were not the ones that U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell wanted to see. In his remarks, Powell noted that the inspector said that anthrax and other chemical munitions had not been accounted for. More time to inspect was not the answer, said Powell. And to make his point, he cited UN Resolution 1441, the one that warns of serious consequences if Iraq does not cooperate.
Resolution 1441 was not about inspections. Let me say that again. Resolution 1441 was not about inspections. Resolution 1441 was about the disarmament of Iraq.
So what is next? Will the inspectors be given more time? And more time to do what? Will there be another UN resolution? And if so, when? We're curious to hear your thoughts. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. And we begin our discussion today with NPR's Mike Schuster, who has been following today's events, and he joins us now from NPR's West Bureau in Los Angeles. Welcome, Mike.
Hello, Melinda.
Well, Mike, let's begin with what the inspectors actually said this morning. I had the impression that Hans Blix seemed much less negative about the inspection process today than he was when he reported to the Security Council a few weeks ago. Did you get that impression?
I guess you could say that. A couple of weeks ago, he was saying that the inspectors were getting cooperation from the Iraqis on the process of inspections, but not on substance. And now he's saying that the process of cooperation has improved and that he's suggesting that the inspectors may be a little bit closer to getting support on substance. He referred to meetings that he and Mohammed El-Baradei held with Iraqi leaders last weekend, in which they essentially gave them additional lists of experts and personnel that might have been involved with the destruction of weapons of mass destruction that the Iraqis claim they did long time ago. And he also reported that the Iraqi government has set up two additional commissions to help in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Mm-hmm. Now, Secretary of State Powell didn't put much credibility in that, but Blix said to the council that this was some improvement.
Mm-hmm. And Mohammed El-Baradei, the nuclear weapons inspector, he really didn't say much different from the last time either, did he?
No. 3 weeks ago, El-Baradei said that there was no evidence that Iraq had reconstituted its nuclear weapons program. He reiterated that today, but he did take on a number of technical issues that have been raised by the United States and other members of the Security Council about just what is in Iraq that might be related to nuclear weapons. He referred to aluminum tubes, the possible importing of uranium from another country, magnets that could be used in the production of nuclear weapons, carbon fiber and high explosives, all questions that have been raised by U.S. intelligence, at least an indication that the IAEA inspectors, the inspectors of the International Atomic Energy Agency inside Iraq, are dealing with all of these important allegations about a possible nuclear weapons program in Iraq.
Mm-hmm. And the bottom line from what they were saying was they urged to have more time, or they called for having more time to carry this out?
It wasn't that they called for more time. They are assuming they have enough time or time into the future unless the Security Council decides to take some additional action. But what I think that the that in total, what they their reports to the Security Council today suggested to many members of the Security Council that there is progress being made in the inspections, and therefore members of the Security Council in the majority have concluded that they could use more time.
Right, right. And that's something that the French Foreign Minister, Dominique de Villepin, backed up as well. He was rather impassioned and spoke very often about results having been accomplished by the inspectors as a result of what he heard in this report today.
That's right. He said that there were concrete results. They should be given more time. In the past, he has called for the expansion of their activities, possibly the tripling of the number of inspectors. He said the use of force is not justified at this time. And specifically, he called for another report from Hans Blix and Mohamed El-Baradei in a month's time on March 14th. To see whether there has been further progress.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And there were other countries that went along with him on that. There were more countries that seemed to take the French position than the U.S. position here.
By far. In fact, I only counted two nations, Spain and Great Britain, who were squarely in the American camp, which is that that the issue is no longer more time for inspections, but clear Iraqi disarmament. Only two that I could tell were firmly behind the United States.
Mm-hmm. And their points were not very different from what Colin Powell had to say, were they?
No, they weren't. Essentially, Colin Powell said that all of the cooperation that Iraq is giving on process it amounts to a bag of tricks that are being used to stretch this thing out indefinitely and that will ultimately allow Iraq to avoid its requirements under the last Security Council resolution, 1441, to completely disarm.
Mm-hmm.
The United States has been making this argument consistently all along. Spain and Great Britain seem to support that. But there were some views of skepticism about Iraq expressed by a number of other members of the council, but none aligned themselves so firmly with the United States besides Spain and Great Britain.
I mean, so much so that the U.S. might have some room to bring them over to the U.S. side if this were to come to a vote?
It's hard to tell. There's a lot that American diplomacy can do if the United States and Great Britain want to bring before the council another resolution, and all indications are that they do, and that the initial wording of it might be circulated as early as this weekend. There's a lot of arm twisting and negotiation and interaction with the other members of the council that the United States can do in order to change their positions. I hesitate to say persuade other nations, but at least change their positions, because when it comes right down to it, if the United States is intent upon going to war in Iraq, no matter what reports have been made before the Security Council, there may be other nations that in the last resort want to ally themselves with the United States, even if they up till then disagree with the U.S. analysis of the situation.
And at least rhetorically today, that seemed to be the U.S. position, because you had Colin Powell saying that force is a last resort. He talked about having been a military man himself and sees it as a last resort, but a resort it is, he said.
And he said the time is coming very quickly where the Security Council is going to have to face up to the very hard choices and make a decision about what happens next.
Okay. 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK is our number if you'd like to join our discussion today. Special coverage from NPR News on the debate on Iraq. We'll start out in San Jose, California. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Wow. Hi. Thanks for having me on your show. You know, I called to offer, if not an ironic, but a historical perspective. I listened in on the debate today, which was I found to be riveting. And, you know, it's really remarkable to me that in the history of not only this organization, the UN, but, of course, what's been going on in NATO with their refusal to defend Turkey, that I cannot, and perhaps other historians might know better, but recall ever such a showdown in these organizations, and specifically today the UN, against its most powerful member, the United States. And the irony, of course, is that it was only a year and a half ago, or maybe 2 years ago, after 9/11, when, of all countries, it was from France that probably in my lifetime the most remarkable headline, the most poetic and the most memorable ever came out, which was, of course, in French, "We are all Americans now." In other words, the amount of sympathy, the amount of empathy, the amount of goodwill towards this country was so great, and now that same country is spearheading in a movement to stand up to, forgive me, the arrogance and the obstinance and the warmongering of again, this country in a forum, the United Nations, which I've never seen anything like this.
Where do you think it, when I understand what you're saying about what happened right after 9/11 and the devil is in the details after that point, where do you think it went awry, Mark?
Obviously, the campaign in Afghanistan had probably a whole lot more support, and there's, of course, many people who have could disagree about that, but it is the insanity, I think. Well, it started, of course, with Germany, with referring to Bush's, quote, adventure in Iraq, and that didn't sound very well in the White House. But, and, of course, France joining in, I think that there was this overwhelming sense of questioning the motives behind the United States' efforts mm-hmm. to run in and rewrite the government of Iraq. If you recall, I mean, all throughout last year, every other week, Mr. Fleischer would come up with like kind of like a new and unrelated reason why we need to go in. Mm-hmm. It just kept changing.
Well, I'd like to, Mark, thank you for your call. I'd like to put this to Mike Schuster. Several observations there from Mark, but what do you make of his analysis of this?
Well, there's no question that in nearly a year and a half since the attacks of September 11th, 2001, the United States has lost a lot of goodwill around the world, and that this, I think, is linked to the Bush administration's focus on Iraq. I don't think that I can say exactly what were the stages or the steps that occurred during that time that led to this point. But I could advance one thing. Clearly, the Bush administration did not make a profound enough case over a longer period of time internationally in order to keep the international community, its allies in NATO, and the members of the Security Council on board with it. The fact that President Bush last spring was talking about regime change nearly every day in Iraq before the Bush administration decided that it needed to go to the Security Council to reinvigorate the issue of Iraqi disarmament and weapons inspections, might have done something to erode international support, and especially support in Europe for the Bush administration's mm-hmm. position.
Mm-hmm. And Mark also said in his recollection this was the time that a lot of other nations were coming out against the U.S. Is that historically the case, or have there been precedents for this?
Well, there was
that open
a lot of
debate, and with the U.S. not necessarily on the majority side there.
There were many times during the Cold War where there were real divisions within the Security Council, and with the United States being on one side, the Soviet Union being on the other, and a lot of unpleasant words for U.S. administrations. But that was always a Security Council that was divided by the Cold War, and action wasn't possible because either the Soviet Union or the United States was going to veto whatever resolutions might come up about whatever issue. Mm-hmm. Now that's not the case. There are not these hard veto-enforced positions on the Security Council. And so in that sense, I think the debate today was unprecedented. That is, the Security Council is struggling to decide what to do, real action in the future, and nations are trying to convince one another of their positions in order to make the ultimate choices.
And we're talking about Iraq in today's UN Security Council briefing, and we're taking your calls here, 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. I'm Melinda Penkava. This is special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Melinda Penkava in Washington. We're talking this hour with NPR diplomatic correspondent Mike Schuster about the UN weapons inspector's briefing at the United Nations this morning, and you're invited to join the discussion. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. You can send us an email at totn@npr.org. And giving us now some European perspective, we have Philip Gordon, who is former director for European Affairs on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. He is now a foreign policy expert at the Brookings Institution, and he joins us here in Studio 3A. Welcome, Philip.
Thank you.
And Ian Black, European editor of The Guardian newspaper, who joins us from his home in Brussels, Belgium. And welcome, Ian Black.
Hi, hello.
Hello. Well, first for you, Ian, did you hear anything new or unexpected today? If not the words, the tone?
Well, I think what we heard at the Security Council meeting was a very, very stark case, not so much by Hans Blix, who, as everybody has observed already, gave something to everybody, but a very stark assessment, if you like, of the state of this crisis. I think this makes things even more serious than they already were. In terms of America's case for war, the evidence of powerful opposition from important countries, from France in particular, backed by Germany, backed by Russia, is extremely significant. And I'm from Britain. I work for a British newspaper here in Brussels. And my strongest single conclusion from what we heard in the council earlier was that this poses a huge dilemma for Tony Blair, for Britain, George Bush's strongest ally in this crisis. This is forcing things to a head in a way which I think is going to be very, very difficult, and a very, very rocky ride lies ahead over the next few days.
Is that because you stated a second ago that the case for war, that Hans Blix gave something to both sides, but he presented more perhaps for more inspections than he did for not having more inspections?
I think the balance of any reasonable conclusion from what Blix said is that there is an overwhelming majority for more time for more inspections. Now, whatever you think of that position, it's clear that the countries which are losing patience and say so openly with the inspections process are America, Britain, and Spain, as your diplomatic correspondent pointed out just a few minutes ago. From a British perspective, and Britain being part of the wider Europe as well, this is going to be extremely difficult, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to sharpen the sense of a very fateful choice for the United States' most important ally. I don't want to overestimate the importance of Britain to the war itself that will be fought, but I think in political terms, the support of Britain is extremely significant and has been all along for the Bush administration. And what we heard today in the Council puts enormous pressure on Tony Blair and puts him in the position that he never wanted to be in, and is a sort of nightmare of having to choose between Britain's loyalty to long-standing relationship, special or not, with the United States. And it's part of a wider Europe, which mm-hmm. is deeply, deeply divided on this crisis.
Mm-hmm. Now, Philip Gordon, do you feel the debate shifted in any way today, or did both sides become more intractable?
Both sides dug in. I mean, I agree with what Ian Black just said about the potential crisis here, and I think it got worse because both sides really are dug in. I mean, the way I see it is this. Blix, because he gave something to both sides, only encouraged the French to dig in their opposition, and the Americans are already determined, on the basis of their own reading of 1441, to go to war. And I think what we'll see in the coming week is which, you know, if you say France is leading the anti-war camp and U.S. is leading the war camp, who is going to win support at the Security Council for their position? France is going to try to line up Russia, China, Germany, and a few others like Syria and Cameroon or something, for 9 votes that say, we see no reason to go to war now, we want to have more inspections. And if they do that, that puts the United States, I mean, Ian Black was talking about Tony Blair's terrible position, what is the U.S. going to do if 9 members of the Security Council are asking for more time, and then Bush, if he wants to do the war soon, would have to veto that resolution and go ahead? I don't think that's likely, but I think it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Mike Schuster? Yep, I think Mike has stepped away. Mike, what would you say on that?
Well, It's not entirely clear whether there'll be this will lead to a case of dueling resolutions. France hasn't said that necessarily that it would introduce a resolution specifically calling for a greater inspection effort over more time. But we do know that Great Britain and the United States are developing the wording of a resolution that would reassert that Iraq is in material breach of its obligations to the Security Council and call for serious consequences. I think we can be reasonably certain at this point from the debate today that the United States and Great Britain could not get 9 votes in favor of that resolution in order for it to pass, even if there were no abstentions. There are certainly more than 9 on the Council who may be willing to vote against such a resolution. The wild card then would be France if it decided to table a resolution of its own calling for more time. And then I agree with Philip Gordon, the United States, the Bush administration would be facing the possibility of actually having to veto that, which wouldn't do its case internationally any good at all.
Mm-hmm. Ian Black, it does seem that there was great drama today with the speeches on both sides at the UN and the Security Council. Is this so large right now that few people are looking beyond what relations would be like between what used to be allies?
You know, it's already been a very, very difficult week. I've spent a lot of time at NATO headquarters in Brussels this week watching the Western Alliance, the Atlantic Alliance, being ripped apart by this issue. On the table is something really quite modest. The United States, on behalf of Turkey, asked the alliance to take some fairly simple measures to plan, not even to deploy, to plan the defense of Turkey in the event of a war. The opposition, led by France, has, I think, honestly generated, it's hard to measure the relative significance of crises in historical perspective, but this is certainly one of the most serious NATO has ever seen. I think that the divisions that we've seen in NATO are not likely to be resolved over the coming days. I mean, listening to Dominique de Villepin, the French foreign minister at the UN today, reinforces the point that France, again, whatever you think of it, is pursuing a strategy of playing for time. It wants more time for inspections. It wants to do everything it can to put back the prospect of war. We know that there are different timetables. There are military pressures. There's the summer heat in the Middle East to be considered. We see very consistently that France is leading a coalition of several significant countries, not within NATO, but beyond that, including Russia, with the backing of China in the Security Council, that are trying to play for time. It is hard to see how to avoid a situation where, if things carry on as they are today, the United States and Britain and whoever else, and they look like very few countries supporting it, will have to oppose the will of the United Nations. They will argue, of course, that they represent the true will and the credibility of the United Nations. Viewed from a European perspective, this feels like the biggest crisis in European-Atlantic relations that there has been for a very long time. And that's taking into account the fact that there are a good number of European countries from what Donald Rumsfeld calls the new Europe rather than the old Europe, who are more sympathetic to the American position. But the sense of a rift across the Atlantic, we're not talking about Belgium, which is, I don't wish to be rude about the country where I'm living at the moment, but in itself not an enormously important country. France and Germany clearly can't be ignored. They have lined up very, very robustly with a strategy of, yes, they're committed to the disarmament of Iraq, but yes, they want more time and are insisting on it in a way that's going to be very, very difficult for the United States and its allies to ignore. This is very serious and getting more serious, in my view, by the day.
Okay, we go to Ken, who is in Portland, Oregon. Hi there, Ken.
Hi. What interests me most about all of the speakers who spoke in favor of more time is that not a single one of them gave a hint, a breath, an idea of how much time, leading one to suspect that they want an indefinite period of time. And what I fear most is that a failure by the UN to face up to the issue, simply to delay and talk about it, can lead to the death of the UN.
Philip Gordon.
Yeah, I mean, I don't personally recall speaking in favor of more time. In fact, I think that Colin Powell has a very strong argument that he makes at the UN when he asks the question, more time for what? The resolution is quite clear, 1441, on what is supposed to happen here and when these so-called serious consequences would be invoked. And it says quite clearly that if Iraq doesn't completely declare full and complete declaration of its weapons programs and proactively cooperate, then there would be serious consequences. And so I think what's happening, those who are arguing for more time have a case that maybe war would be more costly than not going to war. The problem with that case for containment and inspections and so on is it's inconsistent what the UN signed up to with a 15-0 vote in Resolution 1441.
Could there be a problem of vagueness about when Iraq had to declare?
Well,
because there's not a time certain mentioned there, so that allows the debate we have today.
Each side thinks it's acting, it's true, consistently with 1441. But 1441 doesn't, it's true, put any time delay on anything. But it says quite clearly that there would be serious consequences if they don't do these two things. And the difference in the debate between the Europeans and Americans is Europeans are asking for more time for inspections. But what the Americans keep saying, and again, I think they have a point, is Iraq had to fully declare what it has, and that's what it didn't do. And so if you want to argue, all right, we'll give the Iraqis more time to do what they haven't done, then I think you can make a case for more time. But if the argument is we're going to give more time to the inspectors to run around and find stuff, then I think it's inconsistent with what was agreed to.
1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK is our number. We are having today's special coverage from NPR News on the debate in Iraq. Ian Black, where do you think this goes next?
Well, it gets worse in every way that you can think about it, and more complicated. I think that the very clear demand by the French Foreign Minister Villepin at the UN to have another review by the UN weapons inspectors in a month provides a kind of benchmark. People will be arguing around that. Whatever else happens over the weekend, and clearly we're going to be seeing the Americans and the British looking in more detail in the light of what happened today at their plans for a second resolution, there's an important event in Brussels on Monday when the European Union has an emergency summit. It's been called by by Greece, who's running the presidency of the European Union at the moment, to discuss the Iraq crisis. I think that will be an interesting moment to see again within this 15-member European club where the different opinions lie. Will we see Britain, just Britain and Spain against the others? My feeling is that we'll still see a slightly wider camp than that. They're not entirely alone within the EU. The Italians, Silvio Berlusconi, has been very supportive of the United States on the Iraq crisis so far. Denmark, a small northern European country, is traditionally quite Atlanticist, has taken a fairly supportive position in the crisis so far. The Netherlands also is amongst the European countries in the more pro-European camp. But there will be tremendous difficulty, I think, in arriving at a common position. And one of the results of that is going to be that at a time when the entire world is facing up to this a crisis truly of global proportions and of potentially enormous consequences, it's going to be hard to hear coherent voices. We will hear the French, and we will hear the Germans, and we will hear the Russians, but there'll be a lot of other countries sort of floating around in the void of this crisis, not really knowing what to do. And I think there is a worrying sense of drift, that this is really an enormous crisis that the United States, because it is the unassailably powerful country in the entire world, nobody else can really challenge it, is in a position to call the shots. One of your speakers was talking earlier about arm twisting in the Security Council. We're going to see over the weekend across Europe demonstrations against the war. London is preparing for perhaps the biggest demonstration it has ever seen. The organizers are talking about 500,000 people being out on the streets to protest against this. There is, across Europe, I think, whatever the position of respective governments, there is a sense that those governments, or many of those governments, are out of touch with people. again, going back to Britain, to my own country, where Tony Blair has been extremely supportive of George Bush all along since September the 11th, he is out of touch very much with his own electorate. His own party is possibly on the brink of some kind of rebellion over this.
Mm-hmm.
There is a sense that people don't know where it's going, and it really feels, I think, rather frightening that governments don't actually know what to do.
And you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, if you'd like to join the discussion. David is in West Windsor, New Jersey.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hi, David.
Hi. In his address to the Security Council today, the British Foreign Secretary, Mr. Jack Straw, said, and I'm as closely as I can recall it, he said something like, making sure Iraq does not have nuclear weapons is only the first step in putting an end to all proliferation of nuclear weapons. And when I heard him say that, I thought that, you know, I'll be very surprised if they send inspectors into Pakistan or India, and I'll be even more surprised if they send inspectors into India. I'm sorry, into Israel. I'll be even more surprised if they send inspectors into Israel. And so, you know, I thought that it was rather an inappropriate comment for him, and I'm surprised he made it.
Philip Gordon.
Well, I mean, I think he, like everyone, is trying to sell their case, but, you know, you're right that... I mean, the problem with the Bush preemption doctrine that is supported by the British in some ways in this case is that it does seem more particular to Iraq than something you could apply broadly, because it does raise the question, okay, who might be next? North Korea, what's unique to Iraq is several things. One is we have 12 years of UN Security Council resolutions. So there really is a case. You know, Iraq invaded its neighbor. The entire world came together and said, the premise on you staying in power, basically, and us not continuing this war to Baghdad, is that you give up all your weapons of mass destruction. For 12 years, the UN has been trying to persuade him to do it. And so I think you're on pretty firm ground when you're saying, look, to the international community, look, we have to enforce what we've said here. And that's why this can quite strongly apply to Iraq. Second reason it's easy to apply to Iraq, at least relatively coherent to apply to Iraq, is that it's doable. It doesn't yet have nuclear weapons, and in a military sense, you can probably get it done. There aren't a lot of countries you could put on that list. Caller mentioned Pakistan. We're not going to invade Pakistan to get rid of their nuclear forces, or India. And North Korea, you see the way the Bush administration is handling that, not in any way in the same way as Iraq.
But it has to give pause to countries, this idea that another nation could come in and tell them to do what the U.S. wants Iraq to do.
That is part of the idea. It's meant to send a message that we are the most powerful country on earth, and if you defy our will for too long, we will come in and remove you and get it done. My point, though, is that there aren't a lot of places where this is easily applicable. You see how hard it is in this case of Iraq. Despite 12 years of Security Council resolutions, military advantages, and so on, I don't know of a lot of other places where it's going to be realistic that we're actually going to mount a force and go in and change a regime.
Well, we have to take a short break right now. I want to say thank you so much to Ian Black, the European editor of The Guardian newspaper, who joined us from his home in Brussels, Belgium. Thank you so much, Ian Black.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And NPR's Mike Schuster and foreign policy expert Philip Gordon remain with us, and we will get back to more of your calls at 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, and you can join the discussion about what is next in the crisis over Iraq. I'm Melinda Penkava. This is special coverage from NPR News. This is special coverage from NPR News. I'm Melinda Penkava in Washington. We are talking today about the crisis over Iraq. There were the reports from the UN weapons inspectors at the Security Council of the United Nations this morning, and then both sides weighed in. The French and others were saying that there should be more time for inspections. Colin Powell, representing the United States and Britain as well, weighed in with this argument. We're saying the time for inspections was over and we should move on from there. And that is what we're discussing in the special coverage from NPR News. Our guests are NPR's diplomatic correspondent Mike Schuster, who joins us from NPR West in Los Angeles, and Philip Gordon, former director for European Affairs on the National Security Council during the Clinton administration. If you'd like to join the conversation, the number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And joining us right now is Jacques Millard, who is a member of the French Parliament and member of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the French National Assembly. Mr. Millard joins us from the BBC's Paris Bureau. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. Well, Monsieur Maillard, let me ask you first to respond to a comment by Secretary of State Colin Powell today in New York at the United Nations. He said that the purpose of Resolution 1441 is not for more inspections, it is for disarmament.
Well, I agree with him that, of course, we have to make Iraq disarm. But the purpose of the resolution is to check if Iraq is really arming. And until now, we see through the inspection that we cannot really say that Iraq is having massive destruction weapon. Because this is true that Mr. Colin Powell is right when he says that Iraq has to abide to comply with disarmament. But until now, there is very much evidence that, in fact, if it is not totally done, Iraq has really disarmed, let's say, maybe 9/10 or 8/10, and it may have something more, but by this inspection, we may and we can force Iraq to disarm peacefully, and this is very clear that the inspection are working well. This is very clear that more and more the Iraqis are really abiding and are really respecting the inspection, giving evidence, and until now it's very clear that Mr. Blix, Mr. Al-Baradei report that in fact they cannot say that Iraq is having massive destruction weapons.
How much, and that was a position similar to what the French foreign minister was making today at the United Nations, Dominique de Villepin. How much more time, though, should be given for inspections?
Well, look, we are going to have more means. I mean, the Mr. Blix and Mr. El-Baradei, they are going to have more means. They are going to have surveys. And it is very true that in a couple of weeks, we will have the certitude that if Iraq is really lying or not, because you cannot really hide things or dissimulate things as the U.S. pretend. So I think this is a good way. We should maintain pressure. There is no doubt. And I would say that the military preparation of the Americans was a great help to force Iraq to disarm. But we still have an alternative to war. That means to really force the Iraqis to complete disarm. And this is what we will take the chance. And this resolution, the resolution 1441, is not only a question of compliance, it's a question of checking. Mm-hmm. And through the inspection, we can check. And if we, Europeans, French, and many experts, have the real confidence that it will work if we maintain pressure and if we give a couple of weeks more, and I think we'll achieve our aim, which is disarming Iraq.
So a couple of weeks.
I think so. I think it can be done because they have done a huge work, you know, in the past weeks. They have been visiting up to 400 sites. And we have the certitude, for instance, that there is no nuclear program underway. There may be still some biological and chemical, and I agree that we have to check very carefully if Iraq has still anthrax. But I think that really things are going smoothly, but finally to our common aim, which is the disarmament of Iraq.
Well, Jacques Maillard, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jacques Maillard is a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee in the National Assembly in France. He joined us from Paris. And this is special coverage from NPR News. If you want to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Philip Gordon, we heard there of the French position from a member of the National Assembly, but it dovetailed very much with what the French foreign minister was saying today.
It's what the French foreign minister was saying today, and it's what the French people believe, and it's what about 75% to 80% of Europeans believe. It also underlines, though, the real gap that there is between American interpretations of what's going on in French and European ones. The thing about more time, it is all based on the assumption that the inspectors can do their job even without cooperation by the Iraqis. And the American assumption is simply that 100 people in the country the size of California or Texas or France cannot find hidden stocks of things. And I think there's also a question of time. even if one were to accept the European, the French view of this, that, all right, for now, let's keep the inspections going.
And he did say a couple of weeks, which...
Yeah, that's what I mean by the difference between the American view and the French view. I don't know anyone in the American administration or even American analysts who think that a couple of weeks we would have real confidence that they're not hiding serious stocks of weapons of mass destruction, because that's why 1441 put as much emphasis on answering unanswered questions from 1998, when UNSCOM was in there, and the full and complete declaration, as on inspections, because there's a real lack of American confidence that inspectors can simply find things. Mm-hmm. And the other point about time is not just a couple of weeks, but what happens afterwards. If we were to sort of give up and start withdrawing the 150,000 troops who are currently there, as Mr. Millar, I think, rightly said, the only reason the inspectors are there in the first place was under the credible threat of military force. If you pull then that away, how long does this credible inspection regime go on? And I think Bush is just determined not to keep playing this game, deploying troops, bringing them back, and so on.
I want to bring in NPR's Mike Schuster on this. Mike, it's a question of time is what this seems to come down to. And I'm wondering, was that built into 1441, that vagueness about just how much time the inspections would have to be carried out when they came to this resolution back in November?
No, there was not. I mean, there was an implication that there wasn't much time, but there were no time specifications. Mm-hmm. And I think the truth is that it's not an argument about time, or that the various sides use time as an argument for their different positions. Secretary of State Powell said today that Resolution 1441 is not about inspections. It's about Iraq's disarmament. Clearly, other members of the Security Council believe that Resolution 1441 is also about inspections. And they believe that if there can be seen to be intrusive inspections where progress is being made, they're willing to allow that process to go on, in essence, without any limitations. If that doesn't necessarily 100% disarm Iraq, you heard from the French parliamentarian, well, if they're 80% or 75% disarmed, the French and others believe that Iraq, therefore, is less of a threat to its neighbors and to Europe and the United States, and that would be okay for the future. That was essentially the containment argument that prevailed in the 1990s. And they're arguing that the containment, if there are intrusive inspections, that the containment arrangement should be okay for Iraq going forward from now.
We have an email here. This is from Peter in Los Altos, California, who asks, is there any strategic liability for Germany and France to be pro-peace until U.S. starts the war and then say, oh, we didn't have all the facts after the war starts? What would be the advantage for France and Germany to take a pro-war stance right now?
The advantage of taking you could make an argument that even if France and Germany think this war is a bad idea, and that it's going to have negative consequences, you can make the argument that they should get on board anyway, because it's going to happen. And, it's not easy for them, obviously, to say, we're deeply opposed to this war, but, you know, we'll go along. War is a serious thing, and their public is deeply hostile to it, so you see where they're coming from. And yet you could still argue that because it is going to happen, unfortunately now it's happening in almost the worst of all possible ways. The international community is not united, which is not putting sufficient pressure on Saddam Hussein. The recriminations of this one way or another are going to be very deep. And that's why, you know, both sides are dug in with their respective view, and it just gets worse and worse by the day.
And you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. Our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. And we go to, we'll go to Alex in Bethesda, Maryland. Welcome, Alex.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you today?
Oh, not too bad. I just wanted to make a point, and I don't recall the name of the speaker that you had there, but a few minutes ago...
Philip Gordon is here, and Mike Schuster's in Los Angeles with us.
Philip Gordon. He made, I think, what is the most important and the focal point of this, is that the past UN resolutions really have been about disarming Iraq. And Iraq, not really to their credit, but unfortunately really has a very intricate mechanism for making sure that disarmament doesn't happen. So you're left with two choices, which we see today, which is, do we use the force that we've been authorized to do, or do we continue with inspections? And I'm not making a case for either. What I'm saying is that somehow, some way, Iraq is going to have to be disarmed, and it doesn't seem like, based on the current camps that are out there, that it's going to happen in a peaceful manner.
How about waiting 4 weeks? If we heard from somebody with the French National Assembly, I don't know that that's the official time that the French government wants to put on this. But what about waiting 4 weeks? So then there's a little more time, and then war starts.
I hate to use this analogy, but it's a good one. In that, if you've got a 10-year-old child and you've ordered him to clean up his room, and you say clean your room, and he doesn't do it on Monday, he doesn't do it on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and on Saturday you say you've got to clean your room or you're going to be grounded, and he doesn't clean his room and you don't ground him, you're going to pass on the assumption to him that there really isn't going to be repercussions for cleaning his room. And I think what the Bush administration is saying is that up to this point, 12 years is enough. Are we willing to set an arbitrary number like 18 years or 20 years? At what point do you draw the line? And the current climate with international terrorism and the volatility of that region warrants deciding that now is the time to take some type of action, whether it's to forcibly disarm Iraq or figure out some other method of getting the weapons out of there. But some way, it's going to have to happen. And at this point, the Iraqis have demonstrated that they're not willing to do it. And unfortunately, it seems like most of the member nations who in previous times had supported it really aren't willing to back up what they pledged they would do a number of years ago.
Mike Schuster in Los Angeles, is there some discomfort on the international stage, though, of having the U.S. be the parent here?
I'm not sure what you mean.
Well, the idea of cleaning up the room and then and going with the analogy that Alex is making.
I'm not sure the analogy works very well. Essentially, the analogy would say if you don't clean up the analogy with the U.S. position on Iraq would be if you don't clean up your room, we'll kill you. And in fact, the Security Council over years has said if you don't clean up your room, we'll keep sanctions on you and we'll essentially tacitly allow combat air patrols to be flown and some low-level bombing to take place. All of those other measures have eroded over the years. And I think that's what Secretary of State Powell was most concerned with in his remarks today when he said we can't let this get strung out forever, because eventually, and it's not a question of a few weeks, I think the American worry is that it'll get strung out to the spring, the summer next year, and ultimately the measures that nations want to be in place, like intrusive inspections, economic sanctions, and no-fly zones, will erode, and that will give, again, Iraq the possibility of rearming.
Philip Gordon.
Let me say something about 4 weeks. I mean, if you could tell me that if we waited 4 weeks to go to war, we would be able to do it with international unity and a Security Council resolution, I would wait 4 weeks in a heartbeat. In fact, I would wait 8 weeks if we knew that at the end of that period we had a greater chance of doing this with legitimacy and allies and so on. The problem is, I actually fear that giving 4 weeks or 6 weeks or whatever would make that less likely rather than more, in the sense that if four more weeks went by, and with Europeans focused on this is about inspections rather than coming clean, after 4 weeks, even more people would be saying, well, hang on, they really don't have anything. And so that's why I think unless you could be absolutely clear that the 4 weeks are for Saddam to finally answer these questions, then I think you're only making it worse rather than better.
But we don't know what the answers to those questions would be right now. Or is it just presuming that we don't like the answer to his questions?
Well, no, it's a question of clarifying things. I mean, UNSCOM has been quite clear, and the French, and everyone agrees with this, that there are outstanding questions about anthrax, botulinum toxin, VX, all sorts of chemical and biological weapons that have not been accounted for. And that's what, if it's time for Iraq with a deadline ultimatum to answer those questions, fine, it makes sense. But if it's time to see if 100 inspectors can go around and discover them in somebody's backyard, then I think it's just going to make it harder to get unity rather than easier.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Mike Schuster, in just a few seconds, what should we look for next?
Well, we have to see what kind of resolution the United States and Great Britain may be willing to table to support their action. And right now, we just don't know. There was talk of a very quick deadline resolution, possibly 48 hours, but talk has dissipated. So we'll just have to see what the British and the United States has in store for the Security Council.
Well, thanks so much, Mike. Thank you, Philip.
You're welcome.
NPR's diplomatic correspondent Mike Schuster joined us from NPR West in Los Angeles, and Philip Gordon, former director for European Affairs of the National Security Council during the Clinton administration, and he is now a foreign policy expert at the Brookings Institution, was here in Washington. This has been special coverage from National Public Radio. In Washington, I'm Melinda Penn-Cava, NPR News.